Stress is a common part of our working lives, and while it has real and documented health effects, our guest this hour will talk about the upside, how stress can energize us and help us grow and become more capable. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, June 3rd. Does your job stress you out? Is it dragging you down, or are you finding ways to make workplace stress work for you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Thomas Britt, a professor of psychology at Clemson University's College of Business and Behavioral Science. He is co-author of Thriving Under Stress, Harnessing Demands in the Workplace. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm supposed to thrive under stress, not just survive it?
Yes, I think one of the common misconceptions is that what we should do is completely eliminate stress at work, and many employees think that they would be happy if they could just eliminate any signs of stress and have a very kind of low-paced work environment. But actually, what we argue in the book is that if you do that, you're probably going to end up being bored and certainly not develop at work.
Yeah. You write that you think workplace stress is one of the most important forms of stress in our lives. Why do you say that?
Well, when you think about it, most of the time that we spend in our lives is at work. And typically, even for people who are working in order to really bring home a paycheck, they want to be typically challenged at work and to feel like they're contributing to something important for the organization. And so stress related to work can have a big impact. And if it's not addressed in the right way or approached in the right way, then it can end up spilling over into our home life.
And let's talk some about when stress, though, is not good but can be bad. What's wrong with too much stress?
Well, certainly too much stress, especially in the book, we talk about if you're under kind of physical stress at work where there's intense crowding, intense noise, or if you're under the type of stress that you really have no control over, and let's say you have a boss who's abusive or you're, you know, encountering harassment at work, those kinds of stressors are really red flags. And we certainly aren't suggesting that what you should try to do in those kinds of cases is just change the way you think about them. So there are certain stressors at work when you kind of try to approach them the right way and when you try to actually change the way you handle them and they still are there and they're pervasive, then there's really something that you need to do in terms of talking to a coworker or trying to kind of do something to alert people to the presence of these kind of uncontrollable and really toxic demands.
Yeah. Well, I guess let's try to talk about an example. I mean, what stress do I have control over? If, you know, the boss wants 8 reports done by the end of the day and that's what he wants, do I have control over that?
Well, really what we've done in the book is distinguish, and this has been done in the literature, between what could be considered challenge stressors. And these are stressors that if we exert greater effort or maybe we enlist help from coworkers or, let's say, in the case of the supervisor who wants 8 reports in a day, we could potentially talk to the supervisor and just kind of explain how this amount of productivity is really not possible. Those kinds of stressors we refer to as challenge stressors. So those are demands that you can address in kind of more proactive ways. Hindrance stressors, on the other hand, these are demands that really, no matter what you do, you're not going to be able to deal with them through your own efforts. So in a case where you simply don't have an adequate budget to do a project or you encounter constraints and lack of equipment, lack of supplies, or in the case of, you know, being exposed to it, let's say an abusive supervisor who belittles you in front of coworkers, those are demands that are less prone to being able to be interpreted as challenges that you can conquer. But one of the things that we think is there's this tendency, as soon as we're under stress, to believe that we no longer have control. So when, especially when we're under a high level of stress, we kind of have feelings of being out of control, and we might not recognize that there's things that we can do to try to address those demands and kind of remarshal our efforts, think about reaching out to others, maybe change the way we're viewing the demands that we're under, and therefore be able to actually address the demands. And what we argue in the book is to come out even feeling stronger. So kind of if we're never pushed, if we're never challenged, and we never get that opportunity to really overcome obstacles in order to achieve those objectives at work, then we're kind of not growing. We're not kind of realizing some of the strengths and maybe aptitudes that we have in us that have just not been elicited.
Yeah. And you also argue that that the supervisor, our bosses, play a big role in, I guess, having us under the right kind of stress.
Exactly. That's one of the points that we make repeatedly in the book. In each of the chapters, we have what this means for managers' boxes. And they can go a long way to kind of creating conditions where, you know, demands are seen as challenges that can be overcome versus threats where employees are worried that if they don't perform under these very difficult conditions that they'll be reprimanded or potentially terminated. So you can imagine the actions of a leader who creates a supportive environment where, you know, he or she encourages coworkers to come together to work things, to, you know, maybe a leader who allows employees to have more autonomy in how they carry out and structure their job. Those kinds of leaders are going to be much more likely to create a work environment where employees respond to demands, as challenges that they want to try to overcome.
So what's your sense, Professor Britt? Do we have workplaces that harness the demands, or do we have the workplaces that are having us be under this bad stress, this abusive stress?
Well, I think we clearly have both. And one of the things that, for example, the American Psychological Association has their Healthy Workplace Awards each year, where they reward and notice organizations that are really doing things the right way, eliciting motivation out of their employees rather than stress, and kind of creating a safe environment where it's okay to experiment and try to innovate, even if you might make mistakes from time to time. And it's actually been shown that organizations that kind of create these conditions for employees to perform better under stress and are actually more engaged and kind of have feelings of vitality and energy at work, these kinds of feelings are associated with higher-level productivity at the company level. So companies who have employees who become more engaged when they're faced with demand versus disengaged and kind of focused on threat, those companies actually are more profitable and have a more a better financial bottom line as well.
Well, let's say someone is listening right now who is dealing with what they consider a very stressful workplace or work situation right now. What steps should we follow to try to turn that around or to thrive under that challenge?
Well, one thing that I would first do is to look at how, try to get a sense of the nature of the stress and what are the demands that are kind of causing the employee to feel the stress that he or she is feeling. And to kind of look at whether those demands are what we were talking about earlier. Is it a challenge demand where you can potentially address the stressor either through your own efforts or through reaching out to those who are around you? Or is it more of a hindrance stressor where it's something that's kind of impinging upon you that you have less control? And if it's possible to take action to reduce the amount of that stressor, then that's really one of the first things to do. And actually, even before that, often how we perceive our work environment can have a big effect on it. So two employees under the same condition might perceive their situation very differently.
We'll pick up on that point right after we check news from Wisconsin Public Radio and National Public Radio. You know, why can one employee have a thrive under stress while another does not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about making workplace stress work for you. We are talking with Thomas Britt, a professor of psychology at Clemson University's College of Business and Behavioral Science. He is co-author of Thriving Under Stress, Harnessing Demands in the Workplace. And we are discussing the benefits of stress at work, how to tell the difference between good and bad challenges, and welcoming your questions and welcoming your experiences. How do you deal with stress at work, and how do you de-stress at home, for that matter? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Professor Britt, just before our news break, we were talking about the perception of the workplace stress by different employees. One employee might see things a lot differently than another. Talk a little bit more about that.
Sure. Well, there's been a lot of studies that show that unless the stress in the workplace is clearly severe and there's an agreed-upon demand that is kind of bugging every single employee of a company, that a lot of the outcomes of work stress have to do with employees' perceptions. And a lot of factors go into an employee's perceptions of stress. I mean, we know that personality is linked to these appraisals of a workplace demand as a challenge or a threat. So, for example, people who are high in the personality trait of hardiness are more likely to see these demands as opportunities rather than as threats. But one big factor that employees have more control over is the amount of social support, or at least in terms of trying to access, is the social support that they have. So if employees have social support at home from fellow coworkers as well as from their supervisors, they're more likely to respond better to these demands, and they're actually more likely to perceive these demands as challenges.
Yeah, what do we mean by the support? Someone who commiserates with us, or someone who does our work for us?
Well, I mean, exactly. So there's different kinds of support in terms of there is that emotional support where you have an employee, you have a coworker that you can really go to and talk about what's going on with you at work. Now, there is some research to suggest that if all you do is complain to coworkers about the demands that you're under, that this can actually backfire. But, if you're going to a coworker and kind of just, seeking reassurance, for example, that these demands are, face all the employees and that we've all had to learn how to adapt to them better, then that can be helpful. But there's also that informational support where an employee can kind of give you a strategy, a fellow coworker can give you a strategy that he or she has used to better, deal with the supervisor or better to deal with these time pressure deadlines that are coming up. And one of the things we talk about in the book is that fellow employees can either provide us with energy that can be helpful in allowing us to deal with these demands, or we all know fellow employees who might de-energize us. So if you think about the people who you spend time with at work, kind of think about whether you come away from meetings with various individuals feeling drained or kind of feeling kind of an extra pep in your step because these are coworkers that have really kind of energized you. And obviously you want to try to increase the time you spend with coworkers who are energizers and kind of find ways to minimize the time that you spend with de-energizers.
Yeah, and I'd assume the de-energizer is that employee that might be complaining all the time.
Right, exactly. If you know, you go to a fellow employee and they're, you know, they start to tell you, you try to talk about the about a reasonable demand that you're under, and then you basically spend a half hour hearing about the multitude of demands they're under, it's obviously not going to leave you in a better state to approach challenges or demands that you have in the environment.
Yeah. And the employee that energizes you might very well be saying, boy, this is great. This is really going to lead to, you know, big successes at work, or this is really going to be an important project that's going to serve the public. And when you hear that, you're going to be more energized.
Well, exactly. That's one of the things that I didn't really talk about in terms of, you know, it's easy to say approach work demands with a challenge mindset, but kind of how you go about doing that is a challenge in of itself. But, you know, by focusing on the possible growth that might occur, so, you know, if you're taking on a new project at work, instead of seeing it as this, you know, extra duty that falls outside your training and that you shouldn't be doing, you know, if you view it as an opportunity to develop a new skill and kind of grow in your job in a way that could lead to a promotion, that kind of mindset is obviously going to help you approach, you know, this potentially stressful demand in a different way.
You know, and I'm sorry, we lost a caller who was going to tell us about how she not only deals with a demanding job outside the home, but she's a caregiver. So when she goes home, she's a caregiver of somebody who needs her help.
Sure.
That's a double whammy.
Well, exactly. And one of the points that we make, that we devote a large amount of space to in the book, is the importance of recovery from work demands. So both during the workday, how do you recover from kind of challenging things that you've encountered and resupply your energy reserves? And then also when you get home, there's a lot of recent research showing that what happens at home has an impact on your next day motivation and stress. So especially for the employees who are the most engaged in their job, who care the most about what happens, it's especially crucial for these employees to detach both physically and psychologically from their work when they're home. So, you know, if they're doing things like not checking email all the time in the evening, you know, not thinking about work in terms of what needs to be done the next day, but literally detaching from work, that employees who do that more when they're off work are more likely to approach tasks better the next day. And the caller, who is a caregiver, did you say she?
Yes.
As a caregiver, when she gets home, is going to miss the opportunity to resupply those energy reserves and actually have, you know, may encounter things that cause her to have her energy drain further. And one of the things that I would suggest is that the research in this area basically argues that it's most important and this might be difficult for her, but to try to relax. So to, you know, have some time to yourself where you're doing things that you find relaxing, enjoyable. There's also doing mastery-related things after work. So, for example, you might try a challenge at cooking a new recipe or trying something new. And then to try to feel a sense of control when you're away from work, because oftentimes at work you don't have complete control of everything that happens to you. But the hope is when you're away from work, you can find occasions where you can exercise control. So I would say for the caller who is a caregiver after work, as hard as it may be, it's going to be especially important for her to try to carve out some time to relax and to get a sense of mastery and a feeling of control, potentially as a caregiver, in terms of what she's doing for the person she's taking care of, but also kind of, you know, enlisting, where possible, help from others to help her care for this other person, because of the recognition that if she doesn't have some time to recover from the workday, then the next day she's going to face the ensuing demands with a higher degree of threat rather than challenge.
We are talking with Thomas Britt, a professor of psychology at Clemson University's College of Business and Behavioral Science, co-author of the book Thriving Under Stress, Harnessing Demands in the Workplace. And we wonder how you recover from workplace stress, how you deal with workplace stress. How do you detach from work when you go home, or do you? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Peter on Facebook says, having perspective is essential. Yes, I need to get X done before my meeting, but I still have it much better off than many. How about that, Professor Britt, putting it into perspective?
Well, that's a great point, and that's something that can be very difficult to do when you're in the throes of a very demanding situation at work. But it's true, and there's a recent study that showed that if you randomly assign some employees to write about three things they're grateful for at work each day, whereas another group of employees doesn't get assigned that task, you know, those who write about gratitude and what they have to be grateful for in terms of their job are actually more likely to report less stress and higher levels of motivation at work. So it is the case that when we stop to think about, put things in perspective, like the writer said, and to just reflect on the what we have to be grateful for in our job, that is a strategy that can, you know, kind of in some ways completely change the way the employee is approaching what they have to face. So if things could be a lot worse, and you're kind of grateful to have the job that you do, even though demands are high, then it's much more likely that you're going to have feelings of engagement and vitality. And
oh darn it, we lost our guest. We'll have to call him back, and we will remind you that you can call us with your questions about workplace stress, managing workplace stress, even thriving under workplace stress. And what about what Professor Britt just said? What are three things you are grateful for when it comes to your job, even if it is a super stressful job? What are you grateful for in that job? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Does your job stress you out? Do you think it's dragging you down? Or are you motivated by the challenge, the stress? Are you finding ways to make it work for you? Let us know what you think. Here's a interesting comment from Chris on Facebook. Finding your calling in employment is the key. I was a frazzled member of enforcement, law enforcement maybe. Now I am an RN, and fast-paced work environment is stressful, but it is mainly gratifying. I don't feel stressed. That's interesting, Professor Britt. So if you're in a job you love that you think is you know, doing is your calling, that you are doing good, you may feel less stressed than if you're in a job that is not your calling.
Yes, that's a great point. In one of the chapters of the book, the final chapter, we talk about the failure to thrive. So let's say you're detaching from work, you're approaching demands the right way, you are trying to get help from coworkers, and no matter what you do, you just still feel this constant sense of being overwhelmed and under threat. What we argue is that what might be happening is that there's a fundamental lack of fit between you and who you are and your job and work environment. And a lot of research shows, as the writer indicated, that if you sense a high degree of fit between who you are and your job and your organization, your motivation is going to be much greater and you're going to be less stressed. And so, you know, if you find yourself, like the writer did, kind of feeling a constant sense of dread and stress, it's a big decision, but it probably is a good idea to rethink the organization you're working for and perhaps even your vocation. So there's a couple of, reader or listeners might have heard of the book, What Color Is Your Parachute?
Yes.
As a very nice a book to kind of help you decide based upon your skills, abilities, personality traits, values, you know, what type of job is best for you. And if you perceive this sense of misfit and, you know, that you doubt the importance of what you're doing or whether you're suited for it, you're going to be alienated from your work, and that's going to really inhibit your ability to experience a sense of thriving or engagement in the work that you're doing. So it sounds like the writer, you know, really went through, you know, really came to the realization that he needed to change occupations, which is obviously a drastic move, but one that might be necessary if you really want to be engaged in your work as opposed to alienated.
Let's take a call before our next news break. Corey in Madison. Hi, Corey.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. I'm sorry. I'm on my headset driving through Madison in the traffic. When I get stressed out, I used to just get up and go for a walk. I found that it relieved a lot of tension and pressure.
It, right during the workday. How's that, Professor Britt? Go for a walk.
Well, it's such a great example because 30 years ago, a pioneer in the study of energy, Thayer, he did a study where he had individuals walk for 10 minutes and examined the effects that had on the person's mood. And it is certainly the case that physical activity can go a long way. And what we argue is that kind of activity, especially during the workday, is a good way to recover from the demands that you've encountered. So it's interesting, a study was done that looked at the nature of the breaks that people took at work and whether that break could be considered a respite where they were kind of away from the workplace, not thinking about the workplace, versus a break that was a chore, where they were taking a break, but during that break they were writing an email, responding to correspondence, and it really wasn't a break. And those employees who took more breaks that were characterized as respites, as walking for 10 minutes would be categorized as, were more likely to perform better in the ensuing time period at work.
We need to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will be back talking more about how we can make workplace stress work for us. And we wonder if you've come up with a strategy. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. It's going to be partly cloudy this morning, becoming mostly cloudy this afternoon with a chance of showers and thunderstorms in western Wisconsin. We can expect highs in the low to mid 70s. Coming up, it's our big question after 7 o'clock. We will ask you, which of the Democratic candidates for president do you support? That's coming up. after 7 o'clock. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I work in a job where I help convey information from intelligent guests to our thoughtful and involved listeners. And I really believe it makes a difference in the quality of life in Wisconsin. So while this can be a stressful job, the mission of WPR helps me cope with that stress, maybe even thrive under that stress. I do get a little stressed out, though, when you don't call in when we're talking about something. Are you not engaged in this conversation? Do you know all there is to know about this this topic of workplace stress? We are talking with the co-author of the book, Thriving Under Stress, Harnessing Demands in the Workplace, psychology professor Thomas Britt. And we're talking about making workplace stress work for us, talking about how we can not just survive stress, but thrive under stress, how we can recover from stress at home. We welcome your experiences, your suggestions. We welcome your questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Jim in Iron River is with us. Hello, Jim.
Hi, good morning, Joy. And Professor, I wanted to appreciate that you cited What Color's Your Parachute? It's a great book. I've referred a lot of people to it. It's been useful in my life. It's been around for like 40 years. I just wanted to comment that I must respectfully disagree with this. The comment that you made about people who essentially talk themselves into feeling better by counting their blessings by saying, okay, although I'm feeling really bad, I have so many things that I can be grateful for. And the reason I say that is that it sets up cognitive dissonance. There's a part of the person, a part of us that's feeling really distressed. And instead of listening to it and attending to that more deeply, we get busy with another part of our mind trying to talk us out of it. That sets up a condition of cognitive dissonance, and I've seen that in my own life as well as other people that I work with, and it doesn't work very well. What I do instead ask people to do is use mindfulness techniques. That's one way of doing it, relaxation techniques. I use focusing from the Focusing Institute. There's other mindfulness techniques out there. Singing, being part being part of a choir, or just singing your heart out to the radio, or whatever. Being physically active, and I'm sure you've talked about some of that. I tuned in late.
Yeah, we did. But Jim, that's a good point. He says if the boss is really hammering you to get the job done, Professor Britt, he says that's not really a good strategy to say, well, at least I have a job.
Well, that is a good point. And also, I would like to echo the benefits of mindfulness training for helping employees to adapt better under stressful work conditions. That's a recent trend that and there are a number of studies that show the benefit of that. And I guess I would think about the gratitude component more as a way to potentially transform the stressor that the employee is feeling. So maybe instead of ignoring, what's distressing the employee, instead that what's stressing the employee is kind of reinterpreted potentially in line with some type of gratitude. So Salvador Amati, one of the inventor of hardiness, the hardiness personality trait and hardiness training, kind of talks about how people who are hardy can really reconceptualize the demands that they're under in a way that's healthier. And so I would see being grateful for what happens at work as a potential way to address the feelings of distress caused by a particular demand. But I agree that certainly you don't want to ignore those feelings. You kind of want to address them, but hopefully through kind of transforming their meaning by potentially focusing on being grateful for the work you have, or potentially being grateful for some other component at work that has the potential to offset that. So you might say, even though this particular thing at work is bugging me, I need to keep in mind that this is one task, and there's plenty of other things I'm asked to do that give me a source of pride, and therefore that helps kind of transform the way the one stressful thing is being experienced.
Let's go next to Wayne in Appleton. Hello, Wayne.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing?
Good. I understand you're under some stress right now at work.
Yeah, I think my dad told me a long time ago I probably worry too much, so here I am at 58 still worrying about stuff. But I'll give you a little scenario, and just some feedback would be appreciated. So the company I'm with, had some definite changes. We were bought out. New group comes in and takes over. Then they put in new management above us, and they come in with a lot of the new catchphrases and buzzwords and things like that, and it seems like they're tying my hands on my ability to make decisions with my customers, which is affecting the relationship with the customers. And thankfully, the people that I work for, they see that as well. So I try and look at this the best way I can, but it's creating a lot of stress, and it just seems like it's not as fulfilling as it used to be to do the job that I'm in, which is like a national account sales job.
Yeah. So, Professor Britt, maybe some general advice for someone in Wayne's position.
Well, and that's actually one of the more difficult types of demands to encounter at work, about organizational change, where the changes are kind of forced upon employees and they're denied their autonomy. This is one of those occasions where proper leadership and management could really go a long way in terms of helping the employees not feel as stressed by these changes. And, it sounds like the person who called in has a support network that at work that is capable of kind of affirming that the difficulty of some of the changes that have been made. In this kind of situation where the employee is unable to find significance and value in their primary task, that is a difficult situation.
It would be very hard. Here he used to have the power to make decisions in his job, and then the new management kind of took that away. That's got to be stressful. You think talking to management would help?
Yes, I mean, hopefully sometimes managers really don't realize that what they're doing, the effects that they can have on the employee motivation. They might see it as a very, very reasonable change, but they're not aware of the effect that it's having on the motivation and engagement of their employees. So hopefully the management would be open to feedback, especially if I'm sure that there are multiple employees in the caller's job that are feeling the same thing. And, the manager can be encouraged to make changes that give the callers more autonomy. And typically, if managers are shown evidence that job autonomy is linked to reduced stress and better performance, they typically can be convinced to experiment with having their employees be given more autonomy over their work tasks. But that is a very difficult situation, especially when you have the prior condition of autonomy that really promotes your ability to address the demands in a positive way. To have that taken away from you is bound to have some immediate effects.
Let's go next to Abby in Madison. Hi, Abby.
Hi, I am just joining your conversation, but I work at a company in Madison, Wisconsin called Exact Sciences, And I just wanted to make a comment that I think that a lot of really good things can come out of stress. We at Exact Sciences, I feel, are a really dedicated group, passionate about what we're doing. And we, as a result of that, have been able to bring an incredible idea back to life in just 5 years, and we're changing lives doing it.
Abby, that's great, and I'm sorry I don't have time to go into how you're changing lives, but I think that there we go back to having something you're passionate about or a valuable mission that you're accomplishing, helping you deal with the stress, Professor Britt.
Yes, and that's another that highlights another important factor that's been shown, that if employees can see the impact that their work is having on those outside of the organization, that has been found to be a major driver of employee motivation and performance. So there's actually been studies done where a group of employees was randomly assigned to receive or to have a conversation with a beneficiary of their efforts, or to have things go as normal, and productivity really skyrockets after the employees had contact with the beneficiary of their efforts. So if you can highlight or reflect upon the significance of what your work is doing for those outside of the organization, that can really lead to higher engagement.
We have just a minute to go. One thing that we can do today to make the most of our workplace stress?
Well, I think that what I would say is to look at how you're approaching the demands. If you sense that you are adopting a threat posture where you're kind of guarded and kind of thinking about how everything can go wrong, that type of mindset probably is not going to help you. But if you can have a mindset where you think about how you can address the demands and maybe reorganize tasks in order to get more done, and to have this sense of challenge and kind of approaching or attacking the demands, that will probably help address what you're getting ready to face at work.
Thank you very much for being with us.
All right, thank you. It's been fun.
Thomas Britt, professor of psychology at Clemson University's College of Business and Behavioral Science, co-author of Thriving Under Stress, Harnessing Demands in the Workplace. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Caleb Lado for producing and directing this hour. Coming up tomorrow at this time, we'll talk to a man who built his own planetarium near Rhinelander, plus the author of a new book about it. This is the Ideas Network.